Today, continuing our class in Exodus, and we're beginning in Exodus 17, verse 8. This is the first battle. The first battle with the inhabitants of these group in the wilderness, a nation there. And will they come out victorious or not? Again, they've had, they can expect six battles in their trek in the wilderness. And they'll be fighting at this one, particularly the Amalekites. And they'll win this one. Of course, they'll fight them again. And this, you'll find a lot of this in Numbers 14 and Numbers 21. They'll fight them again. They'll lose that one. But they'll be victorious when they fight Arad, the Amorites, and some other tribes in their way to the Promised Land. So there's things to think about. This is not going to be easy. God was with them, of course, in the Exodus, especially in the plagues, and protect them at the Red Sea. But they're going to do things on their own, be participants in their trek to the Holy Land. And and that's rightfully so, too, that God has, yes, helped them in everything, but you've got to stand on your feet eventually. And that's what they're going to be doing for the rest of this. We just finished some murmuring that they had in reference to water and food and that sort of thing. But from this point forward, they're going to be traveling to Sinai, and which is the mountain that they want to be. And God wants them to be there so they can deal with the commandments, deal with the beginning of the laws and ordinances that God's going to recite and Moses is going to record for them, and that they're going to live by the rest of their lives and the lives of their children after them. So in 17:8, the Amalekites, and these Amalekites were interesting. You know, if you imagine 2 million people, they're strung out for a long string of in their travels. And apparently these Amalekites were attacking the rear part of it. And hopefully, I guess they could work their way up to the head. But the point is they were attacking. So Israel turned, they fought them, and they won. Of course, there's an interesting part where Moses and went up to the top of a mountain, and whenever he would raise his staff, the staff, of course, it was used in the Ten Commandments. On the Ten Plagues. And so he raised that staff. And whenever he raised the staff, then they would be winning the battle with the Amalekites. And when the staff would fall down, it says here, because he was tired, his arms were tired, okay, then they would begin to lose it. So Aaron and Hur were with him, and they would hold up his hands, and he would be winning when that would occur. And finally, they did win. And it's a testament there to the power of God, the faith in God, as represented by the staff of God that he held up. And again, they won this first battle. Now, sometimes you'll see people reference to hold holy hands up, or hold your hands up, and that sort of thing. Maybe it comes off of this. But it's certainly a place of victory in their first battle in confrontation with an enemy. So it's something to remember there. And I guess when the battle was over and they dealt with this and told the people about it, it, again, would build confidence that God is still with them. God is still with them. And also confidence in Moses for that. So it's an interesting thing to think about. Now, as we move on through, that's chapter 17, and of course he built an altar there. An interesting thing in 17:14. You'll see here, then the Lord said to Moses, write this in a book as a memorial and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek under heaven. So it's an interesting thing here that he's writing this, and it's things that we have, things that preserve. And why would you preserve these victories? Why would you preserve in written form this trek in the Exodus? Why? Build faith, right? Build faith. And not for them at this time, but also build faith for future generations. So that sort of thing is what was needed It's the best approach you can have. And again, build our faith today in knowing that they went through this. God was with them. He stayed with them. But at the same time, he was testing them also. Testing them to know that they cannot rely totally on themselves. They've got to rely on the hand of God, the power of God, and the wisdom of God, if they're going to make it through, if they're going to be victorious. And the same thing for us, that we need to rely on that hand of God, the wisdom of God, which we have, to help us to be victorious over sin and death. So it's something we need to think about. All right, lesson there. And as we begin chapter 18, it's an interesting thing here, and a whole chapter is that when I mentioned it last time, that here's a person coming back into Moses' life. Okay, it's been less than a year since he's seen Jethro, his father-in-law. And, of course, he wasn't present. He was in Midian with Moses' wife and his two boys, and which are probably in their 25, 30 years old by now. And so it's an interesting thing that he brings them back to him, and they visit, because Midian's not that far from where Mount Sinai is. So they come to visit. And the whole chapter is really devoted to that, to this father-in-law coming and bringing his sons. Now, an interesting point, there's a good reunion in 1817 that Moses was this shepherd. He gained the experience of a shepherd. He gained the knowledge of this whole area of Sinai and the wilderness, that sort of thing, and dealing with the sheep. And, of course, at Sinai, that's where he met God in the burning bush, didn't he? Okay, so there's some memories involved here for Moses. And in 1817, then Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. And so there's a good family reunion. And I guess this is good sometimes. We can be in work days, we can be in problems, you know, throughout the week and the month, but sometimes it's good to get together with family and have some time to reminisce. Think about the things that were really important, okay? Family, and then the welfare of the family. So it's things to think about for that. And again, he was welcome to see his father-in-law and his wife and his kids. Now, again, a whole chapter is devoted to this. And of course, Jethro, who was the father-in-law, after Moses told him of all these things that had happened, of course, he had heard about it. That's why he came. But the point is, told him in detail what had happened and the plagues, the Red Sea, all those things were this God of the Hebrews was part and parcel with them, part and parcel in their protection, in their guidance, still dealing with the clouds, leading them in the fire at night. So he's there, no doubt. Jethro probably saw the great cloud there, okay, and the fire. So it's an interesting thing to know that they're having a reunion. He's telling her about those things. And it's interesting in 1811 that this Jethro, who was a Midianite, who's questionable, the religious exposure he has and that sort of thing, to this God of the Hebrews. But he recognized something. 1811. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people. So in his family, he's got this faith building, this confidence building in this God of the Hebrews. Not just another God. This God here has power. This God has here brought him out. This God is with him. And so that's, I think, a good thing to have within families, a unity, I guess you'd say, of faith and confidence in the Lord. So, and they'd meal together, some sacrifices together with the rest of the elders. And the next day, Moses went up and in the evening, and the father-in-law saw what he was doing. Now, here's an interesting point here. It really transitions in 1814 and the rest of the chapter. And here's Moses administering, you know, as the leader, the judge, you name it, he's it, all right? And he's got all these petty things, 2 million people coming to him with petty things one to another, anything of who possesses what, wives, kids, common everyday things, And he's been judging that all the time. You're sitting there judging all those little nuances, okay, of petty things. I'll say petty. It's important to the individuals. But his father-in-law sees, and he gives him advice. And what was that advice? One word starts with a D.
Delegate.
Delegate. And here's Moses, and he's got all this, all thinking about, and God contacting him and talking to him, and all this. It's quite a strain. As a matter of fact, that strain is kind of shows itself in the writing here that Moses came. And again, Moses is writing this by the inspiration of God. That in 1818, you will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Good advice. Good advice, because Moses got a lot of difficult work ahead of him. Of course, he doesn't know about the additional 40 years. But he does know that this group he's with is murmuring. This group is kind of on the edge of faith and not non-faith time to time. And anything can trigger him on that. And again, we just finished that they wanted to stone him. It was getting so bad. So he's got that to deal with. So his father-in-law gives him good advice. In life, should we, if you're in business, can you do it all yourself? Do you tend to develop people under you if you're in supervision? I know I got good advice when I was working in a stress job where you could take on yourself many, many responsibilities. But I got good advice from a guy named Jimmy Schindewolf. I've known him for many years. He was now the director. He said, train the people under you to do your job. Don't hide it from them. Because you may not be around, but for the sake of the organization, sake of your own personal health, deal with that. And it proves to be good advice. And again, it's biblically based. Delegate things. In the New Testament, is there one example of this sort of delegation? When one is overloaded with the work, one sees their primary job, their primary work, the thing that's of most importance. And what's the example in one example in the New Testament? That's right, Acts chapter 6, where the apostles were end up dealing with, I'm not saying mundane things, but important things. But their job was to teach, preach and teach. Because when you get people's hearts changed, these sort of things of helping, sharing, volunteering, they follow that. And so that's a good example there of that. In families, can we get so involved in work? Can we get so involved in those sort of things that leads us away from our primary responsibilities? Yeah, you can. You can. Okay. Can you get so involved in things here in a building that you neglect your family? You neglect those things. So it's just a matter of, what do you call it, the balance in life, whatever it is. But the point is, think about that as you prioritize your life. And again, looking at the long-range important view. Okay. All right. And all this is really dealing with that. So it's an interesting thing. And in 1823... if you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure. And all these people also will go to their place in peace. So this sort of thing of not waiting in line for days, you know, for a judgment on something. This idea of, really resenting the system. Maybe disliking Moses, okay? What is God doing? But the point is you can endure in this. And it brings peace, doesn't it? It brings some harmony. It brings some cohesiveness. It brings something settled. Sometimes these things, when things never get settled, they just keep on and on, settling. Okay? And so, this sort of thing. And again, Moses went back to his primary in 1820, and the advice from Jethro is to teach and preach. Teach the statutes. Teach the people. Teach the people. statutes and the laws. Because what we're going to see, beginning in 19 and 20 and forward there, is that there are many, many laws. Many laws that God's going to give them to live by day to day, how to get along with one another, how to get along with people who are not Hebrews, and most importantly, how they are to worship God and praise Him. And so we'll see that coming. So that's really the part there. I think that's it. Okay? And again, one last point. It's kind of like the Supreme Court in the country here, that when you get those real big issues, you go to the Supreme Court. And Moses reserved that for himself. When you get the big issues, of course, what's big, all right? But things, maybe the people underneath him, these people of the fives and tens and fifties and hundreds, they couldn't resolve, come to Moses. And Moses, by the wisdom that he knows, the wisdom that God gives him, by inspiration, by experience, those sort of things, he would judge those. So it had an end in every case. An end in every case was there would be a judgment. So it's an interesting chapter to deal with Jethro and that. Of course, he went home from there. And, why was his family not with him? Again, it's less than a year. Why was his family not with him? I don't know. Could have been that they maybe recognized the real problems he was going to have in Egypt, maybe going to that foreign land. Maybe it was, some would say that it's a circumcision that the boys went through, okay, and healing from that. Who knows? But the point is, they're back here now, and the father-in-law is going home. And Moses reunited with his family and his two boys. So an interesting point. All right. Now, chapter 19, and it starts off where we've been going all along. Get us to Sinai. Get us to the mountain. Get us to the mountain. And we saw this back in Exodus 3:12, where we're going to go to the mountain. Go to the mountain. And there's a symbology in this, that this is where you're going to meet God. This is where things are going to be explained to you. This is a place where worship is going to be defined. This is a place where those questions that you've had in your mind are going to be erased. So they're going to be here for a year or so. And so they're here. And they're camped by the mountain in 19:2. So Moses goes up to see God. Moses goes up to see God. And we see here that there's an explanation and a reminder also in 19:4, reminding him that what he did to the Egyptians. Always these pointers back to the Exodus, a mountaintop of faith. And that's the thing to hang your head on. I mean, you go over those and you know that God was with them, the power of God. And he stayed with them too, through the Red Sea. So, I guess the eagle's wings in 19:4 is just a matter of protection. And now, he makes an interesting statement in 19:5. And it's not one that he hasn't talked about before. But in 19:5 and 19:6, now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel. Building confidence? Yes. Reinstating that they need to obey. You know, I haven't done all this for to show that I'm have power. I've done all this to help you to believe. To believe that you are mine. That of all the peoples on the earth, you are my possession. And I'm going to provide and protect. But you've got to do something too. You got to listen to what I say. You got to listen to what Moses is writing down. You got to listen to Moses. Because he's my prophet. So, and again, that's lesson for us today. Okay? okay, we've seen the New Testament. We can see these prophets of this time. We need to listen to the prophets, and because that is the will of God. And there's a lot of effort went into this to preserve these words for us, these words that will judge us in the end. So it's things to think about, all right? Principles stayed the same. And as we go through 19, he's building faith. If you've read it, it's the idea that they're going to meet with God. He'd go back and forth. Maybe he went up and down Mount Sinai 5 to 7 times. It's kind of difficult to see which. But the point is, God's talking with him, conversing with him. It's not hidden from the people. And finally, he wants the people to hear something. And so here's this mountain. Let's see. Was it just snow-capped and serene? In your reading, what kind of things were happening on that mountain? Yeah, I mean, clouds, smoke, lightning, not to mention thunder. I mean, it was a sight to see. I don't know if 4D could take care of it, okay? All the money in the world. But the point is, here's the people seeing this, and of course they've given prohibitions. You don't touch the mountain. You don't go up it. But the point is, this is something where God in this great mountain here is exhibiting power, exhibiting awe, exhibiting those things that they can see. 2 million people can see this mountain. And it's a great thing where God's talking to Moses, talking to them. And so God says, okay, I'm going to talk to you guys directly, you 2 million. So man, with all this going on, he's talking. And what do the people say when they see this? I don't want you to talk to us anymore. This is too awesome. We're scared to death. All right? I mean, we're in fear. We're in fear. Why don't you just do like you've been doing through Moses? All right? And I guess I can see that reaction. I can see that reaction. God wanted to talk to them, to let him know that he cares for them, and to reinforce something. With this great mountain of fire, great mountain of sounds, trumpets. I mean, it'd be interesting. But to see that, all of them seeing that, and the fear coming through them, that this is to remind them, yeah, those plagues did happen. Yeah, my promises came through Abraham. Yes, the promise of land of Canaan. Have confidence in that. That's going to occur also. So those sort of things are what he's trying to get in their mind, that I'm still with you. Yeah, you can have a cloud, a fire. But this, he's on the mountain. And, I mean, there's lightning going everywhere and sounds and on and on and on. So you just talk to Moses. You just talk to Moses. And so Moses goes back up and he talks to him. Lightning flashes, thick clouds, which you can see in 1916, not to mention 1912. And they're so scared that we're going to die. We're going to die. Well, they've been thinking they're going to die for the whole trip here. But the point is here, God's going to be the instrument that kills them because of the awesomeness, I guess you'd say, of this scene. And, you know, whether God's talking to them, I don't know how they heard it. It's, you know, surround sound or Bose system or directly from heaven or, you know, from the top of the mountain, whatever it is, God has come down. Now, God is behind these great thick clouds that are there also. So it's an interesting thing going on. So anyway, it's quite a sound, quite a sight. All right. And so Moses going back and forth and top of the mountain. And again, that warning about don't touch the mountain. Don't come up to see me, okay, as Moses is going up. Don't do that. Because if you do it, you're going to die. I don't know how, but he's going to die. Okay, either the hands of the Israelites or the hand of God. So that was a sacred mountain, a mountain reserved for those in whom God wants to visit him and come up and talk with him. Now, and that's shown in 1912. to. Now, and also in 1924. So what we've got now is, so God's talking to Moses. Moses writing these things down. So we're into 19. And what's interesting, we're through with 19, So then it's Exodus 20 now, which we're going to handle in just a moment after I make sure. I don't know if we need to do the question. Let me look at those questions. I think there's a couple things you may want to review in that. Question number 3 on your page 36. These people, before they went to the mountain, all these people, okay, what are some of the preparations made by the people in 19, 9 through 15? What do these things have to do with receiving the law of God? They were told to wash their garments. Well, wash their garments, get clean, okay? Symbolism? Yeah, when you stand in the presence of God, you need to be clean and not unclean, quote unquote. So those sort of things, when you're in the presence of God, there's a special look that you need to have, a special frame of mind. And again, all this leading up to the idea of the tabernacle and all that. That there's a special, I'm not going to say holy ground, but there's a special reverence, a special mindset that you need to have when you're in the presence of God, when you're doing those things of worship, when you're doing those things that honor Christ, that honor God. So it's an interesting thing here about wash your garments. In other words, it's not just another day, all right? Not just another day. Something special about this. So I just wanted to deal with that question number 3. And let's see. Now, we're going to move into now chapter 20. So Moses up there, and now God's only talking to Moses. They can't hear what's going on. And he starts to recite the Ten Commandments. But before he does that, he prefaced it with Exodus 20.2. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Then he starts the Ten Commandments. Why is that important to say that? Have you heard that before? Yeah. What he's been trying to stress all along, whether to the idolatrous nations or to his own people, to Moses. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Again, another pointer back to the Exodus, back to the plagues. So those sort of things are important. So now I'm going to tell you some things. I'm going to tell you, Moses, some things you need to write down. So I'm going to just go through these real quick. I just read them, the Ten Commandments. I'm sure we'll be familiar with those. But there's one thing I want to say before that. The general way, okay, that we look at the Ten Commandments is Exodus 20, verse 3, stands alone. Stands alone as the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. But in the largest denomination, Catholics and the Lutherans also, they combine verses 3 through 6. And basically what it does, it gets rid of the idea you shall not make an idol, a graven image. And there's some difficulty in Catholicism with that and that sort of thing. So that's probably why they did that. But the point is, in their own view, so that would even 9 commandments, wouldn't it? Okay? So how do you get to 10? Well, when you get down to 20, verse 17, they broke that into you shall not covet your neighbor's house as number 9, and you shall not covet your neighbor's wife and his male servant, okay, as number 10. So just think it'd be something to be aware of if you deal with that question, okay, someday. Of course, the whole context of 2017 is all covet. So that's why you would naturally move that to be 1. So when you deal with these 10 commandments, again, God's speaking to Moses. Speaking to Moses. It's not like the movie where he had the written down tablets yet. Okay, so he's speaking to him. What you're going to find here, that God continues to speak through him for multiple chapters coming up. All these laws to him. So, number one, you shall have no other gods before me. And commandment number two, you shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven, above or on the earth below, and the water underneath. Okay? You shall not worship or serve them. Or he'll visit thee. He's a jealous God, iniquity of fathers and the children and for generations. So what had they just come out of Egypt dealing with? What they've been exposed to for centuries? Idols, idols, idols. What's the fight in God's predominant speeches to them always? Stay away from the idols. Why would you stay away from idols? Easy, right? You tend, if you got an idol, you'll tend to worship it. You'll tend to put your confidence in it. You'll tend to rely on it for changing things, okay, or blessings. So that's what God never, never wanted to see. Because when you divert your mind and your attention, having faith in something else for your eternity, something else for your livelihood, something else for whatever, because they worship everything with an idol, that's when you divert your mind from the one true and living God, the Creator, one who's responsible for the plagues, one responsible for the exodus, okay? And not to mention the only begotten Son, which we have contact with. So, idol is a big deal, okay? And the graven image was just a representation of that. Representation of that. And something to think about, okay, as we form, okay, or associate with idols. Okay. Now, of course, an extension of idols and whatever you tend to put your confidence in, it can be whatever, okay, in life. But remember that. But this time, at this place and time, the big deal was these graven images. Okay. So that's why you tend to think that verses 4 through 6 would be the second commandment. Number 3 was Exodus 20.7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain, trivializing God's name, trivializing God. And then the fourth one is really Exodus 20.8 to 20.7, which deals with the Sabbath and keep that holy, keep that holy. And we can read from in Scripture that if you didn't keep the Sabbath, if you violated the Sabbath, you violated the Sabbath, it was penalty of death. That's a big deal. What do you remember in the Sabbath? The Exodus. Okay? The plagues. That's what you remember. And that's got to build confidence in them. Okay? Trust in God. All right? And number 5, honor your father and your mother, that your days are prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. Family? Yeah, family. Okay? 2013, you shall not murder. 2014, you shall not commit adultery. 2015, you shall not steal. 2016, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. 2017, covets. Covet your neighbor's house, you covet his wife and his possessions. You just don't do that to your neighbor. Now, do you see a transition from honor your father and mother through not covet your neighbors? What is that talking about? Talking about worship? No, the first few are dealing with this idea of how to view God, how to worship God, how to deal with those things that honor and praise Him. Of course, it all does, but you're transitioning from the 20 verse 12 to things of neighbor, things of how you would treat other people, how you treat your family. Don't steal. Why covet? Those sort of things are important to God. And it's, again, we can see that. We've had a whole course on that in Matthew 22, dealing with honor God and honor neighbors. So those are things. After all, when you initially were converted, what sins were you guilty of? Neighbor. Those sins, okay, which you were washed from. Those things to think about, okay? Because you didn't have a relationship with Christ at that time. All right. Any questions? All right, now, after the Ten Commandments in 2017, back to the mountain again, back to the mountain, and because this is all going on while this is being done. We're sitting there watching this, God's talking to Moses. Moses writing these things down. And then the people perceived all this thunder and lightning flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And they all trembled and stood at the distance. Of course, they said they'd die again in 2019. And then Moses says in 2020, don't be afraid, for God has come in order to test you, that in order that the fear of him may remain with you so that you may not sin. Test? What test? They're seeing this awesome sight. They're hearing these sounds. They're seeing things that they've never seen before, never see again. Well, actually, Moses is seeing it also. But he's not afraid now, is he? One time he was afraid. One time he was, but now he's not. Now he goes right up. That's what God says. Come to me. And it says, order to test you. What kind of test are we talking about? When you see this, would you want to believe even more? Is not the plagues that occurred in Egypt, aren't they going to bring it to the forefront of your mind when you see the power of God being exhibited here on the mountain? These sort of things are a test to build faith. And so God's always been testing them. Now, in 2022, then the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, yourselves have seen that I have spoken to you from heaven. Appears to be from heaven and above. You shall not make other gods besides me, gods of silver, gods of gold, shall not make for yourselves. That's idolatry. You shall make an altar in 2024 to me, an earthen altar, and sacrifice on it, peace offerings and burnt offerings, and you shall make an altar of stone for me, and you shall not build or cut stones. Okay? Because if you use the cut stones, in other words, you make an image. You're really honing it, really making it pretty. You're making it look like a bird or a frog, or you're making it look like something other than a pile of rocks that has meaning. Then those sort of things lend you to think of idolatry. And then also in 2026, you shall not go up the steps of my altar so that your nakedness will not be exposed on it. What's that about? Modesty? Decency? Apparently when you went up that, okay, if you had steps in it, then God's concerned about diverting your attention. Because God wants 100% focus. And in later years, they had linen pants that they would wear under their robes. And so it was always that way. God's concerned about diverting your attention. You divert. Yes, ma'am. As Linda said, back in Adam and Eve, the clothing there. And from the beginning, God's always been concerned with modesty. Those things that are decent. Those things that don't divert attention. Okay? If I wore a clown outfit this morning, a big nose and all that, would that divert your attention? Would it be less serious, what we're talking about? It would tend to think that, wouldn't you? Okay? So it's things to think about, dress and modesty, even from the beginning. I'll say from the beginning, quote unquote. Okay, modesty and decency was a concern. So we'll continue that. One quick thing about burnt offerings. Burnt offerings is the idea, why is it burn up completely? You know, a lot of the offerings they did were, you'd burn it and you'd clean it and then you'd eat part of it, okay? Share, that sort of thing. Burnt offerings was the idea that's totally burnt. In other words, keep your mind on this sacrifice requires your total attention, which I've been dealing with, your total attitude towards God. Don't divert your attention. So that's the idea of a burnt offering, a completeness to it, okay? And again, that should reflect the idea of how you view God. Okay, thank you.